It is our joy to present to you one of the third series of retreat conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and is well known as an author, lecturer, and retreat master. In these conferences, Father treats of many topics of present-day interest to any Catholic and to anyone. They will prove to be of assistance to everyone sincerely trying to live a Christian life in today's world, whether he be layman, religious, or priest. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Living in the Presence of God. Father Hardin.
I know that there is a single subject in spiritual literature that is more highly recommended or insisted upon as more important than the spirit of recollection or of living in God's presence. There is no question about its importance. The important thing is, how do you grow or develop in this living in God's presence? What I normally do, as you may know from whatever conferences you may have heard of yours truly, I like to divide my matter into a certain number of parts, indicate what you're going to look at, and then briefly look at each dimension. These will not be of equal length or of equal importance. But first, I think we should ask ourselves, what do we mean by presence? As often as we use the term, and as we shall before this, is it retreat? Is over? We'll talk at some length about the real presence. So what do we mean by presence? Secondly, what do we mean by living in God's presence with our mind or mentally? Then what do we mean by living in that same presence with our wills or volitionally? Then a sort of capsulizing of all that we have seen by then, can we sort of summarize everything, capsulize it, and in plain English ask, well, in practice, practically, what does it mean to cultivate this presence of God? You might wonder why we shouldn't simply concentrate on this practical aspect. Whatever else spiritual life is, it is practice. And more practice. You don't become spiritual by reading books about it, no more than reading recipes. Do you bake a cake? You've got to put the elements together and bake the cake. Now, one reason why we save the last part for last, that is, living in God's presence practically, is that since God is spirit, and since we are spiritual precisely because we have a mind and a will, whatever this practice of living in God's presence means, somehow it must mean being united with Him by the two arms of our spirit, which are the mind and the will. But I reserve the last part to synthesize what we will have seen by then, how we might foster even more living in that presence in which we hope to spend the rest of eternity. So what is presence? As you know, a vocabulary like the English one, which is in large measure created by the kind of people who use the language, and since so many people who speak English, the exact number is over 330 million in the world, most of them perforce, are not Catholic, and many are not Christian. Well, the vocabulary of a culture becomes what the people of that culture make it. Words, verbally, semantically, may remain the same, but the meaning attached to words depends on the people who use them. It is therefore of more than passing importance, not only here, but as we shall be doing for, well, we've got 4 days, according to my schedule. We will be looking at words and trying to get behind their meaning so as to see what we really mean when we use the words that are so commonplace, even in our spiritual life, here presence. Presence describes always a relationship, and a relationship between people. I could, by an extension of language, say that, say, this microphone is present to me, or I to it. But really, it wouldn't be correct. You are present to me, and I hope I'm present to you. So it's a relationship of people, so that we are not precisely present to stones or trees, nor they to us, in spite of what the poets say. Furthermore, and this is of the heart of it, when we speak of presence, and we imply that two or more people are somehow present to one another, it makes a big difference whom you're speaking of as being present to whom, whether it's A present to B or B to A. Because A can be present to B, and would you believe it? B might not be present to A. Now regarding God, let's ask a few questions and always try to get into the water carefully so we won't sink beneath a lot of verbiage. The deepest mysteries of our faith are simple, but words can complicate them, and I don't want to stand between the mystery and you. We ask, is it true that we are always present to God? What would you say? Are we always present to God? Yes. Don't hesitate. Yes. We better be. Otherwise, we wouldn't be. In fact, I think the best theological definition of nothing is where God is absent. God, in other words, must sustain us, and surely we must be present to Him. Otherwise, if He walks away, using the language of Genesis, that's the end of that. We were, but then we're not. Second question. Is it also true that God is always present to us physically as the omnipresent divine reality? I notice you hesitate. The answer is still yes. He is always present to us by His infinity, or as I prefer to say, physically. The reality we call God is always present to God, present to us, because it is always affecting or influencing us. So we're always present to Him, we better be, and He's always present to us as the infinite God. But admitting that God is always present to us physically, is He always present to us spiritually? No. No more, and I hope I will be clear, no more than a person who is physically next to us in a room, say here in chapel, he is present to us spiritually unless or until we somehow respond to his or her being there. A person may be physically in the room, but unless I am somehow aware of that person being there and respond to that presence, well, all right, the person is there. He's occupying physical space. But as far as we are concerned, he or she might just as well not be there. Now, it is this spiritual presence of God to which we are addressing ourselves in this meditation. And all of this, if you please, is only to explain one word. We're not yet in our subject. But it's awfully important to know what words mean so that we might distinguish between God's being present to us physically. Is He always present to us physically? Yes. Is He always present to us spiritually? No. Is He always present to us really? Yes. Is He always present to us psychologically? No. Is He always present to us objectively? Yes. Is He always present to us subjectively? No. Is He always present to us actually? Yes, of course. Is He always present to us responsively? So that we somehow do something about His being present to us? No. Back to our subject. We begin then by asking ourselves, what does it mean to live in God's presence mentally? We should start by saying that we cannot begin to talk about living in God's presence in this spiritual sense in which we are speaking unless we first make up our minds. And nobody, not even God, will make up our minds for us. We must make up our minds to take time out to think of God. What does it mean to have someone present to us in this mental sense? Does it not mean, before everything else, that the person is on our minds? Space and time are irrelevant here. And in the deepest sense of the word, because we are talking about spirit being present to spirit, it is immaterial here. That's what spirit is. The reality which is independent of space and time. She may be in... Is this Erlanger? And he in Southeast Asia. Or the one present to us may be long since dead. Dead in what? dead in body, but the spirit, sisters, never dies. Centuries may separate us from that person. No matter. By that mysterious alchemy of the spirit, the moment we begin thinking of him or her, but we've got to begin thinking. They become, and this is not make-believe, they become literally present to us. In fact, sisters, the person may be physically in our presence, but unless I'm thinking about them in the spiritual sense in which we are talking, they are absent, right? If then we wish to cultivate living in the presence of God, we must set our minds. This is only the beginning, but it is a beginning. No, you can't finish anything unless you first start. We must first set our minds to think about God. We must place him before the eyes of our mind. And this God will not obtrude himself. We must look at him with the power of our mental reflection, enlightened by faith. You know, there's all the difference in the world between an object, say a person, being there or here, and our seeing that person, and more still, even seeing and looking at the person. Agreed? And we've got to make up our minds to look. We must first look at God with that faculty whose principal purpose is to see God. We must then see him with that strength power we have of we, a long pause, calling people we want to think about. And one of the blessed privileges we have, if we want to, we will. If we don't, we won't. As I've discovered with my students, they can be wrapped, I used to think, in attention at what I'm saying. I call on them. They don't have the least idea what I'm saying. And it's the power we have over these minds to direct them to attend to whom we wish to think about. And you know, if we want to, we can forget too, can't we? We can start thinking, and would you believe it, we can stop thinking. Some people have the ability to turn their thoughts easily and almost instinctively towards God, others not so easily. And for your benefit, sisters, not that you haven't heard it before, the essence of the contemplative life is not great facility in turning towards God. That's not what makes a contemplative. What makes a contemplative is turning one's mind towards God, whether it's easy or not. No matter, this is the basis of everything else. It is not everything else, no more than the foundation of a building is the building, but it is the basis. Of course, it demands some effort, especially effort to stop thinking about other things less than God. But we must take every occasion to use, or if need be, create situations which then become occasions for being, listen, thoughtful of God, where my thoughts are full of God. Now, what we've got to convince ourselves of is that we have the power of turning our minds to what we want. This, that is, the creating of occasions to become, well, full of thoughts of God, is the fundamental principle operative in spiritual reading. What's the difference between spiritual reading and, well, not spiritual reading? Well, the nature of spiritual reading ought to be such that it should remind us of God. Whereas other things remind us of, well, of whatever else the reading is about. This is the purpose of sacred images, statues, crucifixes. This is the purpose of liturgical ritual. This is the purpose of religious symbolism, down to the cut of the vestments and the color for different liturgical days. This is the fundamental reason in God's providence for external gestures and words and posture and position in times of prayer, so that the posture that I have with my feet that is folded under me, which is better described as kneeling, or my hands in that posture which we call folded, and my head, say, bowed. This is the whole purpose for creating such occasions, and for you, whether you fully realized what you were doing. I think it takes about 30 years in the religious life to realize what this is all about. That we should be surrounded, literally immersed, in religious symbols which will remind us of God. This is so basic that if we wish to foster living in God's presence, we must make sure that He first comes to our attention outside of the mind, in order that He will enter inside the mind. Now, while it is possible for me to think of God in the absence of external reminders of God, it becomes increasingly difficult, and among other things, is one of the main reasons, as by now I've told so many religious communities, for wearing the religious habit. That's why, notice, you've got that emblem on your chest. The Passion of Jesus Christ. To remind you of the person of God who became man and who died for our salvation. And sisters, I'm sure you know, are now dressing, though I must qualify the substantive sisters, but call them sisters, are now dressing in the most exotic secular garb. Is it any wonder, as one told me, who was in secular clothes, that first, when I started wearing secular clothes, I began to feel like a secular. Then I began to think like a secular. And now I'm afraid I'm beginning to act like a secular. These are not trivia, right, sisters? All of which is providentially intended that we might be thoughtful of God, because the stimuli, the sensations that we experience outside of us will be pretty much the measure of the kind of thoughts we will have inside of us.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.